hear people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on a war, speak facts, and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in the fallen dynasty. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. Just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They live on milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm if you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down with life, I'm fighting in a fallen dynasty.
Not quite sure what happened to that, but this is Paul Fromm. You're on the fighting side of me, and here on altrighttv.com or whiteresistanceradio.com, you can reach us through either channel. On the last show, I discussed at some length a woman by the name of Ghislaine, although it's spelled G-H-I-S-L-A-I-N-E, it should sound like Ghislaine, but anyway, Ghislaine Maxwell. She's a daughter of a man who was actually a Czech Jew, but was a British press magnate a couple of decades ago. He's a Mossad agent and died mysteriously at sea. Now, she is the long-term time girlfriend of Jeffrey Epstein, who's a Jewish financier, convicted sex offender, pedophile, pimp, and a friend of many of the rich and powerful. Anyway, this is a program that deals with them, and it's called "Who Is Ghislaine Maxwell?" It'll take up most of this show, so I am going to switch directly to that. And this is "Who Is Ghislaine Maxwell?" This was produced in Australia.
There was little Jeffrey Epstein wouldn't do to satisfy his lust for young women and girls. He spent millions masterminding a worldwide sex trafficking operation. A year ago, he was arrested and a month after that, died in custody. Investigators, though, refused to let this scandal go to the grave with him. They shifted their attention to his high-profile friends, among them, Prince Andrew, who continues to dodge requests from the FBI for an interview. But now there's been a substantial breakthrough with the arrest of socialite Ghislaine Maxwell, accused of being Epstein's right-hand woman. She's been charged with multiple child sex offences, and for the first time in a long time, the countless victims in this wicked saga are feeling relief instead of terror. Little St. James in the Virgin Islands is a picture-perfect playground for the super-rich. But it's never been seen like this before. This now abandoned island is the keeper of terrible secrets. A place haunted by what went on here, at the hands of the now dead Jeffrey Epstein, a man who knew no limits.
I'm on my own island. I can do the stuff I want to do. I can do the work I want to do. I can read and score.
In 2003, as he told a reporter, this island was his world, run by his rules.
I realize what I am. I'm very comfortable in my own skin. What I really need to do is I just need to follow my own personality.
And what a dark personality it was. Driven to sexually abuse countless young girls. His private sanctuary, an isolated prison known as Pedal Island, where he would share the girls like prey with his rich and powerful friends.
We weren't anything important to them at all. We weren't even a human being to them. We were just another toy to be passed around. And that's what they did.
Jeffrey Epstein may be dead, but the fight for justice is not.
Today we announce the arrest of one of the villains in this investigation.
Just 4 days ago, Ghislaine Maxwell, the most wanted woman in the world, was found hiding out in New Hampshire.
She ruined so many lives. She belongs in jail. You want to hurt kids? That's where you go.
Epstein's number one co-conspirator finally arrested after a year on the run.
Helped him exploit girls who were as young as 14 years old.
She's repellent. She's truly evil.
Now, a new criminal investigation on Epstein's Caribbean island exposes the true extent of this predator's shocking behavior.
What happened on Luba St. James, it was so horrifying. Their actions were just reprehensible.
And adds pressure on Prince Andrew, still hiding in the palace, refusing to be interviewed by the FBI.
Prince Andrew has simply totally stonewalled.
Of all Epstein's victims, it's the allegations of Virginia Roberts Giuffre that has had the most fallout around the world. Amongst many others, she claims Epstein trafficked her to Prince Andrew 3 times. The first in London when she was 17, then once in New York, and the third and final time here in the Virgin Islands. Prince Andrew, close friends with Ghislaine Maxwell, denies the allegations.
The third time that you were trafficked to him, were you alone with him?
No, there were a lot of younger girls with us, and it was very shocking.
How many young women with you?
I believe there were 8.
Prince Andrew met Epstein through Maxwell, a British socialite, daughter of disgraced media baron Robert Maxwell.
With Ghislaine Maxwell's arrest, how do you think Prince Andrew is feeling right now?
Oh, Prince Andrew should be panicking at the moment, because Ghislaine doesn't really care about anyone else but Ghislaine.
It's all laid bare in her artwork. Maria Farmer is filling her canvas with the Epstein story, the bad and the ugly. For her, a story that started in 1995. It was then, as a gifted student at the New York Academy of Art, she met patrons Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell.
It makes me really sad because the only thing I did wrong was I went to the wrong graduate school. It's the only thing I did wrong.
Jeffrey fell in love with Maria's art, bought her first major work, and hired her in 1995 to buy art for his New York mansion. During that year, she had a front row seat to what went on behind these closed doors, and saw Ghislaine Maxwell in full flight.
She would turn like that, and like as school's getting out, she's like, I've got to get the nubiles. I'm going to get the nubiles.
What did she mean by that, and what did you witness?
So several times I was in the car with her, and she would ask the driver to stop the car, and she'd dash across to the school or the park or wherever she was going, and she would like write down her phone number for a child, a young girl, and then I'd see that child at the house. And she'd say, they're auditioning. You know, I found a model in the park. And I thought it was really strange because I did see a couple girls in braces, and I've never seen a model with braces.
Of course, it was a ruse. Epstein claimed to help manage Victoria's Secret, and Maxwell was his eager model scout.
Have you taken my shirt off? So I took my shirt off.
Instead, as Maria unwittingly witnessed, Maxwell was happily procuring girls to feed Epstein's insatiable appetite for sex with teenagers and young women.
He started getting a little excited about it, and he started touching himself.
A compulsion Maria would soon experience firsthand.
Helan came in to get me one evening. Basically, they brought me to the... Helan escorts me to Jeffrey's room, and he's lying there, and he goes, well, here, sit down. You know, and so right next to him, and then Helan sits on the other side, and they began assaulting me. But really, while I was lying there the whole time, I'm thinking, my sister's been around these people. My sister was 16. She's been around them alone.
Maria's fears were well-founded. Her younger sister, Annie, revealed she, too, was sexually abused by the pair. Maria went to the FBI. It was 1996, and she was the very first victim to officially report Jeffrey Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell to the authorities. But in a pattern that would be set in the decades ahead, her complaint was ignored.
They just kept it all quiet, put it in the bottom drawer. And they were so dismissive that I just felt daunted and I stopped.
But by going to police, Maria felt the full force of Maxwell's fury. Terrified, Maria went into hiding and gave up her art career.
What sort of threats has she made against you? Originally, it started with things like, I'm going to burn your arms, and then I'm going to burn your career, and then I'm going to burn you and the house you live in. And then it was, oh, be careful crossing a street. You know, you can get shot in the back of the head. You know, they were threats against my life, and I told the FBI this.
Do you reflect on how different life would be for so many women today if the FBI had investigated your complaints in 1996?
Yeah. I think about it all the time. I do. And it hurts a lot. And I never had children because of it. Because I didn't feel like they would be safe.
Coming up, threats.
He made no bones about that he could inflict harm.
Lies. She wanted me to believe that she was Jeffrey's girlfriend. And bargains with prosecutors.
It's a deal like none other than I've ever heard of.
How Epstein and Maxwell, she's repellent, way worse than I even understood, did whatever they pleased to get away with it. Makes me very angry. That's next on 60 Minutes.
It's your soul, yes.
In July last year, the slippery Jeffrey Epstein was finally arrested and charged with sex trafficking a minor.
Epstein was arrested aboard his private jet.
For years, he'd used his wealth and power to avoid the full brunt of the law.
The charges allege that Epstein sexually abused young girls by enticing them to engage in sex acts for money.
But finally, apprehended in New York, with bail refused and with no other way out, lawyer Brad Edwards believes Epstein killed himself in prison. Despite some speculation, he was murdered.
I think once his bond was revoked, I think the world just crashed in and the only control he had left was over his life. So he took it.
Hearing directly from a victim is the only way that anyone's really going to understand.
Brad represents victims and describes Epstein as a genius sociopath, one of his most confounding and dangerous adversaries.
He was charming, charismatic, funny. He made you want to like him. That's why he was able to access over 100 young girls and do the kind of things that he was able to do.
Yeah, you speak about his charisma and charm, but he sort of had a double whammy, didn't he? Because he was always implying threats that he could and would hurt you.
He would make no bones about it, that he could inflict harm, you know? He might say, I'll tell you what, if you keep... keep prosecuting me this way, if you keep doing this, someone is going to get hurt. And so, clearly it was a threat, you know, there's no other way to perceive it. But his delivery was as non-threatening as possible.
I think they were in disguise. They were wolves in sheep's clothing.
In the early 90s, the well-connected Kristina Oxenberg, a member of the Serbian royal family and a cousin to the British royals, met Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell, his alleged madam, now charged with procuring girls for him and sometimes joining in the abuse.
She wanted me to believe that she was Jeffrey's girlfriend, but I knew that she wasn't. But she wanted that to be the storyline.
How did you know she wasn't his girlfriend?
Because she's not 12.
With Epstein's death, Maxwell went on the run. But Kristina remembers the time when both Maxwell and Epstein were desperate to be seen.
They were a perfect fit. They needed each other. They were both halves of a whole that they wanted to be. He had the money, she had the connections.
Did you like Jeffrey Epstein?
No, not at all. He was just a Goomba from Queens. Call me a snob. But no, he was a typical greedy person who wants more than they already have.
66-year-old billionaire financier Jeffrey Epstein was in court today for allegedly engaging in sex trafficking crimes.
How serious are these charges against Epstein, David?
When Epstein's arrest last year made headlines, Kristina was moved to call the FBI. So disturbed was she by what Ghislaine Maxwell had told her in private all those years ago.
She was very cocky, and she told me that she had just got her helicopter pilot's license, and that as a gift, to reward her, Jeffrey had bought her a helicopter. And I said, so dangerous, why would you want to do that? And she said, well, because this way we have total control on privacy of who's with us.
And Maxwell let her in on another secret, this time about the infamous Lolita Express, their private plane used to transport young girls and high-profile friends, including Bill Clinton.
She also told me in that meeting that the plane, the private plane that she and Jeffrey used, was wired for audio, video.
Kristina, at the time, were there any red flags for you? At that point, were you thinking, children are at risk here?
Unfortunately, I did not have even the wherewithal to think of such tremendous evil, frankly. I just thought she was the sort of rancid personality. I had no idea we were dealing with true evil.
Justice has long been denied in this sort of case.
Why did you keep going back if you didn't want to go back?
In 2005, an investigation started into Epstein for the sexual abuse of more than 40 young girls in Florida.
I didn't know what to do. I was afraid that he was going to harm my family.
Prosecutors had the evidence and the opportunity to put this sexual predator away for life. Instead, Epstein negotiated a secret seedy deal. He'd plead guilty to the lesser charge of unlawfully paying for sex with a teenager, for which he'd serve just over a year in jail. In return, he was let off all other charges, and incredibly, his co-conspirators, including Ghislaine Maxwell, were given full immunity in Florida, but only for the crimes committed there between 2001 and 2007.
It's a deal like none other than I've ever heard of. But the fact that not only was he able to get away with dozens if not hundreds of crimes, but also somehow get immunity for his co-conspirators, named and unnamed, is something that even the judges who have reviewed this case have never seen.
With her immunity deal in Florida, and a sense the criminal investigation had run cold, Maxwell settled into a luxury hideout, aptly named Tucked Away in New Hampshire. It seems Maxwell didn't count on being chased down for her crimes outside the immunity period. At her remote court hearing on Thursday, where reporters could only listen in thanks to COVID, Maxwell's disbelief could be heard.
A very loud British woman screaming, "Why is this happening? How is this happening? How could this happen?" and just crying her eyes out.
Acting US Attorney Audrey Strauss.
As alleged, starting in 1994 until at least 1997, Maxwell was among Epstein's closest associates and helped him exploit girls who were as young as 14 years old.
Maxwell has been charged with multiple child sex abuse offences relating to the Epstein sex ring, as well as perjury for lying about it under oath. As the world played the Where's Ghislaine guessing game, FBI investigators knew all along, waiting for the right time to strike.
We've been discreetly keeping tabs on Maxwell's whereabouts as we worked this investigation, and more recently we learned she had slithered away to a gorgeous property in New Hampshire, continuing to live a life of privilege while her victims live with the trauma inflicted upon them years ago.
Haunted by that trauma, Virginia Roberts Dufresne was not only abused by Epstein and Maxwell, but also trafficked by them. She alleges to some of the most powerful people in the world. Virginia is now married and lives in Queensland, from where she runs the Victims Refuse Silence Foundation. News of Maxwell's arrest makes this a good day.
This day to me has been like one of the best days of my life. I have not stopped smiling and crying happy tears. And I'm just, I'm elated to know that she's where she belongs. She is the most narcissistic, evil, vain woman I've ever known. And she's finally been knocked off her pedestal.
Coming up,
the actions are just reprehensible.
No escape.
These young girls subject to sexual assault, sexual exploitation.
From an island hill.
Help us victims get some accountability.
The women refusing to give up.
I'm very proud of myself for standing up.
And what now for the Playboy Royal?
The Department of Justice feels Prince Andrew has simply totally stonewalled.
That's next on 60 Minutes. Jeffrey Epstein's paradise getaway in the Virgin Islands may now lie abandoned and desolate, but it holds the secrets of a sex ring even more extensive than first thought.
Once you get on that island, how do you get off?
The Attorney General of the Virgin Islands, Denise George, paints a terrifying picture of what confronted the young women who found themselves trapped here.
It's not like a person who's there and needs help that they can sneak away and run outside and flag down a police car.
There is now evidence that Epstein's year in a Florida jail back in 2007 did not stop him from sexually abusing young girls. It's alleged he did so until a year before his death, here on the Virgin Islands.
These young girls and women were subject to sexual assault, sexual exploitation, through coercion, false imprisonment, where the passports at some points were taken away, and it was quite a number of women, at least up to 2018, that continued.
And that is the jaw-dropping aspect of this, isn't it? So what your investigation is showing is the broad scope of Jeffrey Epstein's nefarious activities, that it just kept going.
Based on the evidence that we found thus far.
And then there's the FBI investigation out of New York, which snared Ghislaine Maxwell. It still has its sights on Prince Andrew. Virginia Roberts Dufresne has long maintained she was trafficked to the prince by Epstein.
She says she met you in 2001. She dined with you. She danced with you. And she went on to have sex with you in a house in Belgravia belonging to Ghislaine Maxwell.
It's a claim the prince famously denied in this car crash interview with the BBC last year.
I've no recollection of ever meeting her.
She was very specific about that night. She described dancing with you and you profusely sweating, and that she went on to have baths, possibly.
There's a slight problem with the sweating, because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time, and that was, I didn't sweat at the time.
Prince Andrew is likely sweating right now. With her arrest, there's speculation Maxwell will reveal all the dark and dirty secrets, naming all the men who were party to them.
In the event that she were to become a cooperator, I think that we can deal with that.
I really hope she comes forward and says, A, B, C, D, E was involved, this is how it ran. Just help us victims get some accountability.
Last month, the Duke of York's legal team released a statement claiming he was cooperating with the FBI investigation.
The Duke of York has on at least three occasions this year offered his assistance as a witness to the Department of Justice.
In turn,
today, Prince Andrew yet again sought to falsely portray himself to the public as eager and willing to cooperate.
The U.S. Department of Justice released its own statement denying Prince Andrew was telling the truth. According to Virginia's lawyer, David Boies, this is an extraordinary step.
It's very significant in terms of the extent to which the Department of Justice feels Prince Andrew has simply totally stonewalled.
What is the end game here in terms of getting Prince Andrew before the Department of Justice?
They want to interview him as a witness, as somebody who was present at the sex trafficking, somebody who was close to Jeffrey Epstein. The second thing that they obviously are going to look at is Prince Andrew as a participant.
Just for the record, you've been on his private plane.
Yes.
You've been to stay on his private island.
Yes.
You've stayed at his home in Palm Beach.
Yes.
You've visited Glenn Maxwell's house in Belgravia in London.
Yes.
Epstein's luxury properties on the island, in Paris, New York, New Mexico and Florida, are where so many girls were abused, where many of them say they were recruited by Ghislaine Maxwell and the other co-conspirators.
Everybody needs to be held accountable that was involved with Jeffrey Epstein and all the crimes they committed.
Courtney Wilde was just 14 when she became trapped in Epstein's abusive web. For the past 12 years, she's been fighting in the courts to make him and all co-conspirators answerable for their crimes.
I feel like I'm fighting against the biggest, baddest people in the world.
But in the long years since Epstein's arrest and death, his victims have just been offered some compassion, now able to seek compensation without the pain of lengthy court cases.
Do you have any idea yet of how many women will claim and what sort of figures we're talking about as individual payouts?
My expectation is that it's probably somewhere in the range of 50 to 100. I think you're certainly talking about $1 million or more. The recoveries are going to be quite substantial.
In a move that has shocked and appalled many, Glenn Maxwell has also staked a claim on the Epstein estate, demanding it pick up her legal bills.
I'm like, what? She's doing what? I just can't even believe she has the balls to do something like that. She basically conspired with him, and the fact that she would come back for money after he's passed, it's just offensive.
Things would have been very different for Courtney if she had not been hurt like this. Would have been very different for Virginia if she had not been hurt like this. These are very sweet people that have a lot of creativity, and they're very smart.
Don't look back now.
As women, Maria Farmer, Courtney Wilde, and Virginia Roberts Giuffre are fighting against the unthinkable crimes done to them as teenagers. With Epstein dead, and Maxwell potentially facing more than 30 years in jail, That fight now turns against the other co-conspirators who enabled Epstein to inflict his monstrous acts on the most vulnerable.
At the end of the day, I'm very proud of myself for standing up to somebody like him and putting up a fight, regardless of who he was.
Is this the end of the Epstein story?
This is just the beginning. There were so many women in Epstein's orbit that participated, procured, and benefited from Epstein's sickness. Jeffrey was dirty. He was sick. He was a pedophile. He's gone. Ghislaine, she is the wicked one. And these women with her, they deserve the same punishment. They deserve to be taken down as well.
So just the beginning.
Just the beginning. Yeah.
Hello, I'm Tara Brown. Thanks for watching. To keep up with the latest from 60 Minutes Australia, make sure you subscribe to our channel. You can also download the 9Now app for full episodes and other exclusive 60 Minutes content.
The expose of Ghislaine Maxwell and Jeffrey Epstein was, I thought, very, very well done. Certainly points to the massive abuse of privilege, and it would certainly be interesting if there was more widespread denunciation of some of Epstein's longtime pals and friends. Perhaps that's expecting too much, but this is certainly another example in a long list of Jewish people the Hollywood producer who was so famous and abused so many. He's now in jail. But I would like to hear more denunciations from within their community of this. And I'm not saying that all of them behave like that at all. But we are always called upon to denounce anybody in our community who commits what might be perceived as a wrong. This is so clearly over the line. It might be helpful if, let's say, organizations or rabbis made it quite clear and delivered ringing denunciations of Epstein and Ghislaine Maxwell and others who've been in that that category and have damaged and hurt dozens and dozens of, in most cases, very vulnerable young women. I'm going to play something by Tucker Carlson, and this is, he breaks down the contenders.
Hi, I'm Rex Moore with The Motley Fool, and I've been to a very crowded CES for 8 straight years now. And I can honestly say that there's one thing...
Good evening and welcome to Tucker Carlson tonight. Sometime in the next 2 months, a group of Democratic donors and political consultants will call each other on the phone and decide who their party's vice presidential candidate is going to be. This happens every 4 years, but for the first time in memory, this is a genuinely meaningful decision. In normal elections, candidates choose running mates whose signature qualities are blandness and obedience. A good vice president is a lot like a good waiter. He appears, takes orders, and leaves. He does not talk too much. He does not express interesting opinions. When vice presidents say they serve the president, they're not being polite, they're being literal. Service job. But not this year. This year, Democrats have chosen a man who can't manage the country, even if he does win. His aides know that. The candidate himself seems to know that. The whole country knows it. And just don't talk about it very much. Joe Biden's decline is so depressing to us, so embarrassing and sad, that most of the time the rest of us try to ignore it and pretend everything is fine. Many of us know that someday we will be where Biden is today, so it feels like bad karma to dwell on it. But the vice presidential pick forces this issue. Whomever is chosen will run the government if Biden wins. Once his advisors make that decision, they'll call Biden in his basement rec room and let him know who his running mate is. Biden will practice the name to make sure he can pronounce it. He'll fiddle with the camera on his iPad, and then he'll tell the world. Who will it be? Well, it will be a woman. We know that much. Biden has said it. She can take half the country off the table right away. No man, no matter how clean, bright, and articulate, is going to share a ticket with Joe Biden. That leaves nearly 100 million American women to choose from. And by the way, when Joe Biden says women, he'd like you to know he means no offense to the gender fluid, gender nonconforming, or indigenous two-spirit communities, all of whom built this country and have Joe Biden's gratitude. But in this case, Biden would very much prefer a lady. So who's it going to be? Well, the Washington Post has already cast its vote. Over the weekend, Jeff Bezos' newspaper all but endorsed maybe the single least distinguished person ever to emerge from the Georgia State Senate, Georgia politics in general, a frequent cable news guest called Stacey Abrams. Abrams lost a governor's race once, then under a pen name wrote some softcore porn thrillers, books that one Amazon reviewer noted have a, quote, nice amount of heat. And that's about the sum total of it. Stacey Abrams' career has unfolded almost entirely without distinguishing achievements. She does understand Joe Biden pretty well, though, and that's her main advantage. Abrams knows or senses that Biden doesn't really believe anything. He just wants to be liked. And more than anything, Joe Biden does not want to be called a racist. That's his kryptonite. This turns out to be good news for Stacey Abrams. If it helps her get the job, she is more than happy to call Joe Biden a racist.
Do you think that not choosing a woman of color, a black woman actually, is a slap in the face to the black female voters?
I would share your concern about not picking a woman of color, because women of color, particularly black women, are the strongest part of the Democratic Party.
Stacey Abrams shares your concerns about not picking a woman of color, especially if that woman is her. She's very concerned about that. Turns out that Senator Kamala Harris has the same concern. Like Stacey Abrams, Harris recently lost an election. The media predicted she would win. But unlike Abrams, Harris isn't just threatening to call Joe Biden a racist. She already has.
I'm going to now direct this at Vice President Biden. I do not believe you are a racist, but you also worked with them to oppose busing. And, you know, there was a little girl in California who was part of the second class to integrate her public schools. And she was bused to school every day. And that little girl was me.
In the long and ignoble history of the give me what I want or I'll call you a racist politics, that has to be one of the great moments. Kamala Harris is so completely out of touch with American life that she imagined that somehow forced busing was wildly popular with African Americans. It was not popular. It is not popular now. Why? Because busing was patronizing and destructive. It hurt everyone involved, except maybe for the self-satisfied white liberals who designed it. Their kids went to private school. But somehow, Kamala Harris didn't know that. So say what you will about Stacey Abrams, she's clearly a lot smarter than Kamala Harris is. We'd like to see Kamala Harris write a porn thriller. We doubt it would have any heat at all. Even Joe Biden seems to have figured this out. Recently, he's been talking to a new candidate who's neither one of these, and it's Gretchen Whitmer, the governor of Michigan. Whitmer confirmed that yesterday on NBC.
How's the vetting process going so far? Are you being vetted by Mr. Biden?
You know what, I've had a conversation with some folks.
How would you characterize the conversation?
It was just an opening conversation, and it's not something that I would call a professional, you know, formalized vetting.
A professional, formalized vetting. Oh, okay. As opposed, apparently, to an amateur vetting, the kind you don't get paid for. What is Gretchen Whitmer talking about? No one knows. Ask anyone who lives in the state of Michigan. They're still trying to figure out why Gretchen Whitmer banned the sale of paint and carpet in response to a pandemic. Whitmer never explained why she did that. It's likely she has no idea herself. Paint and carpet just seemed scary to her, so she made them illegal. Then when citizens complained about this, Whitmer denounced them as racist! You sense a theme here? No wonder the Biden campaign called Gretchen Whitmer. They're looking for someone with deep experience dealing the race card. We should note there are a few other possibilities, people you may not have heard of, for the vice presidential pick. Michelle Grisham is the governor of New Mexico. Grisham spent her first year in office fighting to increase the number of abortions in New Mexico because America's birth rates are falling fast enough for her. Did Grisham call her opponents racist too? Probably, we haven't checked, but you have to guess. And then there's Congressman Val Demings. She represents Florida's 10th congressional district. Demings is not well known, but her appearance is what Biden says he's looking for. Demings was one of the impeachment managers during last winter's climax to the Russia insanity. Remember back when we were pretending Ukraine was somehow vital in some way? Huh? Remember that? Whatever. Nothing else the job put her on television a lot.
Our president put his personal interests above the interests of the nation, corrupting and cheating our democracy, and he shall be held accountable. Because you know what? Nobody is above the law.
Cheating our democracy! Whatever that means. Demings is a former police chief. Good for her. That doesn't mean she believes in enforcing the law, though. She says immigration law should be ignored. She hasn't explained what other laws should be ignored. She's also backed legislation to let police confiscate firearms from citizens who haven't even been accused of a crime. Huh. And then, finally, lingering in the background like a shy teenager, is Senator Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota. Now, in a normal political moment, which this is not, Klobuchar might be the front-runner for the job. She did surprisingly well in the first two Democratic primaries, both in swing states. She's relatively popular, serving in a state that Hillary Clinton only narrowly carried 4 years ago. So she could help. She's also older, she's calmer, more experienced. At times, she even seems like she might not be a total extremist. All of which means Amy Klobuchar probably has no chance at all. Weirdly, Joe Biden, over his 50 years in Washington, was often described as a moderate. And if Joe Biden were still with us, maybe he would be still moderate today. But he's not. Joe Biden's handlers are in charge now. They're not moderate. They've moved the poor guy so far to the fringes. Biden's now disavowing the Obama administration for being too far right. Barack Obama, movement conservative. Pretty amusing, really. Also a little scary. Joining us now on the phone is President Donald Trump from the White House tonight. Mr. President, thank you, sir, for being with us.
Well, thank you very much. And how good is Mark?
Mark's on fire tonight. There's no doubt about it. That's why I call him the great one. I want to start. We have an election in 117 days, Mr. President. And, you know, your campaign came out with an ad. The issue of law and order and safety and security are now key in this country. We'll go over Joe Biden's comments, but your campaign released this ad. It's, I'm of the view that nobody pursues happiness if you're not safe and secure. Let's roll with it.
You have reached the 911 police emergency line. Due to defunding of the police department, we're sorry, but no one is here to take your call. If you're calling to report a rape, please press 1. To report a murder, press 2. To report a home invasion, press 3. For all other crimes, leave your name and number, and someone will get back to you. Our estimated wait time is currently 5 days. Goodbye.
I'm Donald J. Trump, and I approve this message.
Mr. President, I'm going to read the comments of Joe Biden, if I may. He said, surplus military equipment for law enforcement. By the way, they used it in Ferguson and Baltimore. They don't need that. The last thing you need is an up-armored Humvee coming into a neighborhood. I haven't noticed that. It's like a military invading. They don't know anybody. They've become the enemy. They're supposed to be protecting the people. Then asked about funding. Do you agree we can redirect the funding? Absolutely. Okay. Mr. President, I would argue that no American could be happy if they're not safe and secure or pursue happiness without safety and security.
Well, I agree with that 100%. And we need safety. We need security. We can't defund our police. And we can't abolish our police. They want to abolish our police. And as far as the surplus equipment, I've given out hundreds of millions of dollars. This is stuff that was sitting in storage houses all over the country. It wasn't even old, but it was never going to be used again. It was gathering dust, and I gave it out to all of our police forces all over the country. Saved many, many police lives, and many lives, I think, period. It was really, a lot of it was protective equipment, and I know that President Obama and Biden didn't want to give it out. They thought it was terrible to give it out. It made the police look too strong. And I gave it out, and I have been thanked by every police department.
Mr. President, while the Summer of Love zone turned into a shooting zone, and I'm going to run some videotape. One is a man shot while walking a six-year-old little girl in the Bronx in New York, assassinated in broad daylight. Another, a gunman opened fire in a Bronx apartment building. Then I'll show on this very show live our own Steve Harrigan interviewing protesters that took over a city block in Atlanta that resulted in the death of an eight-year-old girl 2 weeks later. You see what's happening. Shootings up, violent crime is up, murder is up, you know, 130% shootings up in New York City. You see the statistics in Chicago every weekend. How do you react to that?
Well, first of all, New York City is not recognizable. Crime is way up, shootings are way up, murder is way up. It's just unbelievable. Chicago, what's going on in Chicago, and we are looking at it very seriously because we're going to have to do something. We've asked them, you know, we're really supposed to be asked to come in and help the federal government, and we have the greatest people in the world, and we can solve it. But we're supposed to be asked, so the mayor or the governor of Illinois should be asking, but they don't want to ask. And you look every weekend, and every week in Chicago, it's just numbers that are not believable. Atlanta's starting to have some problems. So we're ready to act, and at some point we may have to act anyway. We may have to do it sooner rather than later.
Let's talk about the issue of acting. I had a source that told me, I was not able to confirm it, that one of the reasons that the Seattle mayor finally acted is that they were given a notice that if they didn't act, that you were going to. Is there any truth to that?
100%. We were going in very soon. We let them know that, and they, all of a sudden, they didn't want that. So they went in before we got there, but we were going in very shortly, very soon, and we would have taken the chop, they call it chop. We would have taken it back very easily, but they went in, and frankly, the people just gave up. They were tired. They had it for a long period of time, but because of the fact that we were going to go in. Now, if you look at Minneapolis, after 4 or 5 days of horror, we called them. We said, you got to get out the National Guard. We insisted that they do it. When the National Guard finally got out, they walked through it like a knife goes through butter. That was the end of their problem. That was it. It was a great job done by the National Guard. And yeah, we were all set to go into Seattle. Frankly, I look forward to it.
Mr. President, Joe Biden was vice president for 8 years. Barack Obama's hometown is Chicago. Every weekend, we get these statistics. Lawrence Jones, who is our 2020 reporter on this program, actually interviewed the father. He lost a seven-year-old little girl. I don't know how you recover from something like that. But Biden and Barack Obama, President Obama, Vice President Biden, they barely ever talked about the violence in Barack Obama's hometown. What specifically can you do? I know you've offered to help New York City. I know you've offered to help Chicago. I know you offered to help Seattle. I know you did help Minneapolis and you did help D.C. But when they keep refusing your help, what are your options?
So first of all, I saw the interview, and he was a lovely man. I spoke to him at length and with his friend, who's a great guy, too.
Lorenzo Anderson, yes, sir. His son.
I actually invited them down to the White House at some point when they get, you know, when they get adjusted, because it is so tough. I mean, what he's going through is so tough. And he was treated very badly. They didn't even tell him what had happened, when it had happened. Very sad thing. But I did speak to him, and I had a great but very sad conversation, and so he'll be coming down when he's ready. He'll be coming down to the White House. I will say, look, they have to be tough. They have to be smart. What's going on there? And you know, the Chicago police is terrific. The New York police, New York's finest. They're just not being allowed to do their job. They don't want to do anything because they'll end up with lots of bad things happening to them. They're not letting them do the job. And I dealt a lot with Mayor de Blasio. I was very nice to Mayor de Blasio. I got him ventilators when he needed them. I got him hospital help when he needed it. I got him everything he needed. I got him the gowns. I got him the masks. I got him everything, the shields.
I got that man everything. I spoke to him many times. He couldn't have been nicer. And then he throws a big Black Lives Matter sign right down in the middle of Fifth Avenue, and all merchants along Fifth Avenue are furious. They're furious. And the whole city is furious. The city's a city that's in rage. And it was almost a test, Sean. But I was so good to him and to Governor Cuomo like nobody's ever been good. And all you end up doing out of that place is get prosecuted and have a lot of trouble.
And that was President Trump on the Tucker Carlson show. I'm going to take a short musical break tonight. And I'm going to come a little change of pace with the man who brought the California country to Nashville, actually the Bakersfield sound, sometimes called the Buckersfield sound, after the man I'm just about to play, Buck Owens.
Love's gonna live here.
Been on the fighting side of me here on Alt-Right TV or WhiteResistanceRadio.com, and I sign off tonight, as I always do, with the anthem of the real Canada, the Maple Leaf Forever. This is Paul Frong, and you're on the fighting side of me.
In days of yore, from Britain's shore, Wolfe the dauntless hero came and landed firm Britannia's flag on Canada's fair domain. Here may it wave our boast, our pride, and joined in love together the thistle, shamrock, rose, and twine, the maple leaf forever. The maple leaf, our emblem dear, the maple leaf forever. God save our queen and heaven bless the maple leaf forever. At Queenston Heights and Lundy's Lane, our brave fathers side by side for freedom, homes and loved ones dear, firmly stood and nobly died.